The Alabama Crops Report Podcast, your trusted information source for Alabama agriculture.
Hey, everybody. Welcome into the Alabama Crops Report Podcast. We're kind of still in the roaming podcast a little bit. We normally do it in the Alpha building, but we're in the Corley building today.
Yeah, I guess that was the point behind buying a portable setup, right?
Yeah, we can do it wherever we want.
So we're definitely enjoying it.
Yeah, that's right. We've got two distinguished guests for us today, traveled all the way up to main campus from the Wiregrass, Cedric Mack and Aaron Wells. How's it going, guys?
Going good. Glad to be back in the motherland here this morning.
Yeah, yep. Appreciate you guys joining us today.
Absolutely.
Cedric made the comment, so as we record this, it's a momentous day. It's the first day of March Madness, NCAA basketball tournament. I believe it's the first day of spring. And it was like in the 40s when we woke up in Auburn this morning.
Yeah.
Cedric kind of made the point. He knew he was going to North Alabama from Headland or wherever, so he had to bring a jacket with him.
Yeah, it was 64 degrees this morning where me and Aaron are from.
Yeah, I stopped at the gas station below town here, and when I got out, I'd been driving for about 2 hours and 20 minutes or so. And I got out and thought I should have brought my jacket. I was not anticipating the temperature drop or the wind pickup today.
So. Yeah. I always say when you come to the South, if you don't like the weather, just give it a couple of days. It'll change.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
See, y'all didn't get no rain up here. It was raining north of Henry County, south of Barber County this morning. Get here, y'all. Like y'all got any. Yeah. We got some last night. Did y'all?
It didn't wake me up if we did.
Yeah.
We got some.
Well, guys, do you want to kick it off by kind of giving a little bit more kind of introduction about yourselves and you know, what part of the, like, I know you all are pretty close over there in South Alabama, but a little bit more about your areas or regions and what all do you kind of get involved in your job?
Sure.
I'm Aaron Wells, row crops agent in Southeast Alabama. Cedric and I have a 10-county set, and we primarily have split those counties five apiece, but now we obviously will go and work, you know, any counties that we need to, wherever a grower has an issue or something like that, wherever we're needed, we'll go. But I primarily cover Houston, Geneva, Dale, Coffee, and Barber counties. And obviously in our area, peanuts are a big thing. I did my master's work on peanut research over in Georgia. And, you know, cotton is, I think right now cotton's just kind of holding its place. And, I mean, but that's our second major row crop in the area. We do have a little corn, a few small grains, but not too many.
I'm Cedric Mack. I serve the counties Aaron don't serve, and that would be the west side of the region. So that would be Crenshaw, Bullock, Covenanting. I'm missing Henry County and one more.
You got Pike.
And Pike, yeah. So yeah. Pike, those are the five counties that I serve. Again, like Aaron said, we work together really good with that region. I mean, we go where needed. And that's it. I mean, like he said, everything he said, that's it, really.
Yeah, and then you guys are more on the southeast, right?
Southeast side, region,
and
that's
southwest
right.
Is where Christie's kind of filling in.
That's right.
That's right, yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, what's going on in the Wiregrass right now?
A lot of tillage. Corn planting has started, burning down. Aaron, what else am I missing?
A lot of land being broken right now. I think that kind of picked up in the last week or two.
That'll be peanut ground primarily?
Yeah, primarily.
It's going to be a lot of that.
Yeah. What's the first county in South Alabama that plants corn every year?
Pike, probably.
Pike,
Bullock.
And they've started, you said, right?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah.
I would say just from a little micro, not a microclimate, but from a geographical standpoint, you do have more corn grown like up in Pike and Crenshaw counties. Mm-hmm. And it probably stems back from proximity to poultry feed mills. You know, those guys closer to those feed mills are a little more apt to grow some grains up that way.
Soil type's a little different too, or not really?
I would say you might run into a little bit redder soil up that way. I'm sure there's some river flats and stuff like that that are pretty sandy, and there's probably some sandy fields scattered through. But I would say overall, there's probably a little bit heavier soil up in those areas as well.
Is a river flat different from a river bottom? I've never heard that term before.
Well, I guess it just depends on, you know,
where you're from.
What river you're growing up on, I guess. I don't know.
Just never heard of River Flat before.
And them guys got in that region, I guess that goes back to, like Aaron said, you know, having like the chicken houses and all that. But most of them guys would have the equipment to handle corn, you know, grain bins, dryers. You know, they're set up to do it. Irrigation pivots.
Yeah, that definitely helps.
Yeah.
What's so given cotton and peanut are the most acreage y'all where you are, you know, what's kind of the situation going into this year?
We're definitely going to see an increase in peanut acres. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's undeniable. And obviously it'll come at the expense of cotton. And to what degree is kind of still is yet to be told. I think there's some folks that are going to try to stick with their normal rotation and not deviate too much from it because, you know, that's what works on their operation. Mm-hmm. And for more than just, you know, you got planting seasons and harvest seasons and you don't want to overload one or the other. But I think that's the biggest thing. A lot of folks will stick with their rotation, but then we will have some folks that, from an economic standpoint, they just feel they may have to put a field back in peanuts for 2 years in a row and maybe even some chances or cases
what's
3 years in a row.
So what's the normal rotation with peanut and cotton?
I don't know. So I would say typically most of our folks are on a peanut-cotton rotation.
Yeah, so 1 year of
one
each.
Year out, yeah.
Okay. So not 2 years of cotton, most of them.
If you would have asked me that 10 years ago,
it would have been two.
I would have said we're probably closer to 2 years cotton, 1 year of peanuts, or maybe cotton corn peanuts or something like that. But right now it's
and that's
kind of a best case scenario is 1 year cotton, 1 year peanuts.
That mm-hmm. kind of goes into Marshall Lamb in our peanut meetings, you know, talked a lot about agronomic rotations and economic
that's
rotations.
Right. Exactly.
And that's the economic rotation. Yeah. You know, you may be giving up a little bit every other year on your high-end yield potential, but you're staying in business.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you got to do.
I've been in this job 5 years, June to make 5 years. And when I first got here, you know, things were, I guess we would call ideal. You know, things were okay. I mean, corn was $8 a bushel at that time back in 2020. Maybe COVID had an impact on that. But like Aaron was just saying, I mean, you had guys who plant cotton 2 years and then go to peanuts. But now I got some guys under wiregrass that's going on. This will be the third year for peanuts.
Yeah, that's something I noticed. South Georgia, 2 years cotton, one peanut was mm-hmm. very common. Yeah. Now again, this year, it could all change very well. The reason I asked that was in a normal year, cotton meaning cotton peanut, what is the acreage usually split? Is it like a 50-50, 60-40? And how would that change this year? Are we talking 70% peanuts and 30 cotton or any estimates or numbers?
I hate to say 90-10, but it won't be that extreme.
It won't be 90-10.
I would say if you look at USDA's planted acres mm-hmm. numbers, and just I don't have all of them here in front of me, but historically there's been in our area more peanut acres grown than cotton acres.
Mm-hmm.
But then you also figure in some areas like, you know, like we were talking about earlier, there may be people on a corn peanut rotation instead of a cotton peanut rotation. Or you may have some of those folks who are still growing corn, cotton, and peanuts.
Okay.
But if you look at the acres, there's going to be more peanut acres versus any other crop by itself.
That's right.
But when you figure in some of these other crops, you know, that may be taking up acres. But I would say this year, I don't know, I'd just be kind of a stab in the dark, but we're probably approaching that 60-65% peanuts. And probably 35-40% some other crops. But I think I know the National Cotton Council had their growers survey, and they said what is it? Alabama's going to be down 10%. I feel like the majority of that's going to come from South Alabama.
Yeah.
I don't know for sure. But I think overall in the United States, was it 21% reduction? No, I'm sorry. That was Georgia. Because I got to looking at Texas and Georgia, you know, who are
Georgia
two
was close
largest
to 20
cotton acres.
Yeah.
between those two states, they were looking at almost 1.2 million acres reduced just between those two states. So I was in a meeting the other day, and there was a cotton merchant there, and he seemed pretty bullish on cotton as we get closer to harvest season. He kind of felt like we, you know, can see some better days.
Yeah, I saw the other day O.A. Cleveland from Mississippi State had posted that I think he said it could get up to 75 or 76.
When are they predicting this?
Before harvest.
Yeah.
You know, that ain't 75 ain't great, but it's a lot better than 65. Yeah. Yeah.
And I always heard you got to have at least 80 cent cotton to break even. I don't know how true that is. Well, it depends on a lot of other variable cost and stuff.
Yeah, but irrigated field. But
it's rough.
So talking about that, we were just talking earlier about this economic package, I would say. Mm-hmm. I guess that would be a big help. You know?
Yeah, I know USDA made all their announcements on the 19th, on March the 19th, that people could begin signing up for that. And that was part of the funding that came through Congress passed just before Christmas last year. And it's going to offer some kind of economic assistance for the situation that we're in, really, you know, with increased price or increased expenses, input costs, and decreased prices received, you know, by the growers, and trying to sort of bridge that gap because of some of the gaps that we have in the farm bill, just because of the nuances of it, the way it's written, and how we're operating on the old farm bill. So hopefully that should help growers. I'm not going to say that's going to, you know, make anybody whole or completely fix their problems, but it will definitely be a welcome sight.
For sure. It helps.
So, and hope maybe, you know, say by the end of harvest season this year, we see a rally in cotton prices. That's going to help the peanut market. If cotton prices can go up, it's going to help our peanut prices, and it's going to help, you know, the agronomic side of things as well, because then we can go back to a longer rotation if possible, or we're not planting 2 years of peanuts in a row or something like that. So it would be great for the industry in Southeast Alabama if we could see some better cotton prices.
Along those lines, what is something that maybe we're not thinking about if we are going to increase peanut acres? That, you know, peanuts are such a logistic crop, right, with how harvest is. What do we need to be thinking about there? Is there anything?
I would say it's going to be a big year at the buying points. You know, so you might want to check with your buying point. I mean, I'm not saying let the buying point dictate your planting schedule, but just be prepared, because anytime we have a big increase in acres like this at harvest season, because like you were saying, the whole harvesting process, having to plow the peanuts up, let them cure, and then the picking, and then transporting them to the buying point. Sometimes we might get a little anxious and want to go ahead and pick a little sooner. You know, that's just going to hold things up even longer at the buying point, which means we're not going to have access to trailers, not going to have access to, you know, things that we need to keep harvest flowing properly. So I would say, if at all possible, you know, spread your planting season out as much as you can. I mean, within reason, because I know we got other crops to plant, and you know, we don't need to get on into the second, third week of June planting anything either. Now,
our optimal planting date?
It's going to be middle of May. It is going to be like that May the 10th, the 15th. I mean, it kind of falls in line with your peanut RX. And I think I was listening to the podcast that y'all posted, the last one, talking about the information that you had on April planting peanuts.
Yeah.
And the yield bump that you saw by planting peanuts in April using some type of Infura insecticide.
Yeah.
So even if we have to start our planting season earlier, things like that, don't skimp out. It's tempting, especially if we don't have a contract right now, because who knows what prices will be with the acreage increase. But
yeah, you know, a lot of times we think about a dollar saved is a dollar earned.
Yeah.
And that ain't always true in farming, and particularly with plant protection, crop protection materials.
Yep.
That investment should return, should make money. It should, you're not, we're not saving money, we're making money.
Yeah.
Weather is another factor that could affect all that. If we're a vet for 2 weeks straight in a row during planting.
You know, like you said, you know, middle of May, but I think last year, Aaron, some guys started late April.
Well, we basically last year, we had two different planting windows. We had that late April, first week or so of May, and then that prime time that we typically like to plant our peanuts, it sat in and rained and was wet for 10, 12 days.
Yeah, about 2 weeks.
And so that put peanuts planted at the beginning of planting season, a huge gap in the middle, and then everybody tried to scramble right at the end. We had peanuts planted late and everything else, which in turn, you know, drags out planting season or harvest season as well.
Yeah.
But one thing, you know, 06Gs are our primarily planted variety right now. There's folks looking to find different varieties, you know, something that might fit their farm a little better. And a lot of people are utilizing 12Ys and Georgia 12Ys, which is a good variety. You know, it may not grade quite as good as 06Gs or some of the other varieties.
It's a longer season.
But it is definitely a longer season. So if you get stuck in a situation like this where, say we don't want to get stuck hanging on to 12Ys, planting them last week of May, just because they are such a long season variety. And they can hang on, but we don't want them, you know, hanging out there in the field, you know, on into Thanksgiving, you know, trying to plow them up, because we get so far out in the season, they're just not accumulating a whole lot of heat units, and those peanuts just aren't progressing maturity wise. So if you are going to use some of those 12Ys, definitely let those be some of the first ones. And that's just going to sit down. It's just going to take folks to sit down and think about the logistics, like you were saying earlier, the logistics of it. How long does it take for this maturity, this variety to mature, and how can I plan my harvest? And like Cedric said, we can make all the plans in the world, but the weather is going to ultimately dictate everything. But in my mind, it's better to plan and let the weather kind of train wreck us than not plan and train wreck ourselves.
Yeah. But don't forget about your cotton, too. Well, don't let it sit out there
With the roller pickers now, that's just a one-man show. Get that picker loaded up with wrap in the morning and fill it up with fuel and water. And that poor soul is over there by himself all day long, just as long as nothing tears up.
Listening to the radio.
Listening to the radio cotton, and just being lonely.
Sounds kind of nice.
So since you were kind of already, you know, one of the things through this podcast, we're also kind of trying to reach growers and maybe give a little bit of our recommendations on some of that. So you said you've been there 5 years now.
Yes, June
and
makes five.
You have been there
about a year and a half.
Year and a half. Close so a year. Let's say, but you have been around that area.
Right. Since.
So learning from the last years and everything, you know, what are some of the things that you think is, given the commodity prices this year and everything else and the shift, you know, what are some of the main things I think you kind of want to maybe your growers to consider going into this season?
I would say just be mindful again of the situation in the row crop economy, and like Scott just said, you know, or Aaron just said, you know, try to be on time, think about the logistics of the crop you're growing. You know, if you can see a profit with whatever you're trying to grow, go ahead and lock that thing in. Don't get too greedy.
That's a really good point, Sam.
I would say, in addition to that, we've tried to cut as much as we can. But as I don't remember if it was when we were recording or after we started recording, you know, we at some point we can't starve a profit out of a crop.
No.
Okay, so. What we can do, though, is be very efficient, be timely, and be efficient with what we're doing. I know that last podcast y'all talked about planter setup. You know, let's don't just go drag the, you know, have to go cut the privet bushes out from around the planter to get it out of the weeds and take it to the field. And there are people that will do that. I promise you, there's folks that will do that. Let's spend some time, make sure our equipment is operating properly. Let's do a good job, you know, crop emergence, you know, crop protectants, herbicides, things like that, spraying them in a timely manner.
Good part almost kind of put that out. I was thinking about this the other day. You know, like someone asked me, I think I was talking to someone, like, what could growers be thinking? I'm like, man, every little things matter. You know, like mm-hmm. you can't just ignore to like avoid one piece of equipment or the other, or infield checks as you're doing stuff, right? Like this year when the margins are so tight,
yeah.
you can't just ignore and say, well, I think it's doing its job well or it's set up or whatever, yeah. right, and just go.
And I will say this, one area I think we don't have a lot of irrigation in our part. We have more now than what we had 15, 20 years ago because of various reasons. But I would say one piece of equipment on a farm that really no one pays any attention to until it tears up is an irrigation pivot. Mm-hmm. And that is a piece of equipment that's no different than our planters, no different than a tractor. That's something that we need to go out there and, you know, check the air in the tires. Just, they could have leaked down over this, yeah. over the winter, and that'll save you time in the long run. If you check it now, while we do have a little bit of time, instead of out there dragging a jack and blocks and everything else through a wet field because the pivot tire ran off and it got out of alignment and it shut down. Now we have 3 inches of water in that part of the field. But one other thing too is, I know with our corn especially, but folks are applying different types of crop protectants, whether it be a fungicide or something like that, through these irrigation systems, and even to the point we're, you know, applying for liquid fertilizer mm-hmm. to those as well. We need to make sure the pivot itself is putting out the amount of water we think it is and make sure it's doing it uniformly. And due to some funding from the Alabama Wheat and Feed Grains producers, we at Extension are able to go out and do pivot assessments for folks. And just, we're looking to see, you know, if we think we're putting out a half inch, are we actually putting out a half inch? Are we actually putting out 3/10? And then throughout that span, those pivot spans, are we putting out the same amount of water across the same square footage?
So checking
of land.
The uniformity.
We're
along
checking
the
uniformity, and we can give growers a good idea of, is this pivot performing like it needs to, or is it time to really think about re-nozzling this pivot? Or do we have? I've run across this. A new pivot got installed, so this can be done for new systems or old systems. A new pivot got installed, and went back and checked, and the installers had messed up putting their nozzles in. And they had some really big nozzles that are supposed to be out on the end, kind of in the middle of the pivot. So you got way over application in the middle. I'm not saying that happens all the time.
Yeah.
That could have been just a fluke thing. But that's just one way, that to me, that's just one example of being efficient with what we're doing this year. And I did want to mention that to let everybody know. And it's not just Southeast Alabama. You know, we've got some travel funds to where we can go anywhere in the state of Alabama.
So is this what type of setup you have? Is it a trailer with the stuff in it?
Well, basically, it's in a big tote right now.
Okay.
And it's very simple. Basically, we just go out there and we've got these 2.5-quart paint cans, mm-hmm. and we space them out depending on the setup for the pivot. But most of the time, we'll set them up every 10 feet. And we turn the pivot on. It needs to be putting out a minimum, it's either half an inch or 6/10 of an inch. I'll have to check. But we set them out, and the pivot walks over, mm-hmm. you know, runs and goes through the buckets that are lined up in a row. And then essentially we just go back and we measure the water, and there's this nice spreadsheet. We put everything in, and it gives us a graph, and it gives us our efficiency rating, basically, if you will.
And you provide this report.
Yeah, we can provide that report, and that way our growers can look at that and see, you know, hey, we got an issue here. Everything else looks good, but, you know, at 250 feet, we have problems here. Let's go check out those individual nozzles. But we can do that. The only thing is, and this is one issue we kind of ran into last year, by the time people get to thinking about irrigation, you know, corn is, you know, knee to waist high when we start thinking about irrigation. Cotton is already, you know, knee high. Mm-hmm. And peanuts aren't as big of a deal because they're a low growing crop. But we've just got to be able to put those buckets out in a linear fashion, to where the crop canopy does not restrict any irrigation water getting down inside that container. So as long as, like, if you've got a waterway that just runs, you know, that runs straight, that kind of follows the pivot, we can put them in the waterway.
Well,
so that's just something we can help our growers with.
And it's free.
And it's free. Yeah. Sort of. That's right.
I guess checkoff dollars to help them support
right.
it, yeah. but
that's,
it's free.
That's grower dollars benefiting them.
That's right.
Exactly.
That's right. So you need to do it.
That's
because you're
exactly
you're
paying for it.
Now, yeah. I don't need everybody calling me and say, "Hey, I need you here." You know,
that's,
in 2 days.
That's so, everybody set your calendars. We're going to call Aaron on.
So let me ask you on that. Let's say a grower did it this year.
Mm-hmm.
How often they should be thinking about this, because it is a timely process. I know they do a lot of those inside Georgia, I remember.
Yeah.
But is this something they need to be considering every third year, every fifth year?
Or? I would say a lot has to do with your water source.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how abrasive are we, you know, is your well pumping a lot of sand that can affect those nozzles, you know, open, you know, getting, it's kind of like a sprayer.
Yeah.
You know, are we putting any kind of corrosive material through that? You know, I know most of our nozzles are plastic, but still, I would say, you know, we do an initial assessment and kind of see where we are. If we're kind of that night, if we're still 85-90%, then I would say, you know, 3-4 years would probably be good.
Mm-hmm.
But now if we're down there, I checked one last year and I think it was like at 65%. We actually thought we were putting out 3/4 of an inch and we were only putting out 4/10.
So remember this, in the season, as we get closer to the, you know, actual irrigation, all that, we might just do one podcast just on irrigation uniformity,
yeah.
all that, and then, you know,
yeah.
that could be just our focus area
mm-hmm.
for that one.
Cedric, what else we need to talk about?
We didn't hit it. I mean, we'll be, we can meet back.
What are some of the other, I guess other thing is, what are some of the other areas that you guys are working with your growers on-farm trials, or some of the issues that you guys see in your region? And then, like, this is also, you might already be doing some trials, and then maybe some another grower is interested in, you know, you guys working with them on their farm.
For sure, on-farm variety trials, insect, and that on-farm is, you know, variety trials, insecticides, fungicide, nematicides, and then, of course, Aaron, I know he's working really, really hard on drone technology as well.
Yeah, and that's one area I really, and I'll just be upfront and honest here. I'm learning this kind of as I go. So I've tried to learn as much as I can and take as much of it as I can in. But I feel like there's going to be a real great value in being able to scout our crops, or at least be able to identify where we need to go and scout our crops,
mm-hmm.
looking at multispectral images, because, you know, that picks up stresses in plants way before mm-hmm. we can see it with our naked eye. Now, I know, like in entomology, we kind of have really good ideas a lot of times where to expect certain insects to come in to a field
mm-hmm.
or something like that. But with disease, it may be a little different. I know Dr. Steve Lee's been working on, you know, mapping weeds and being able to variable rate or spot spray weeds in a field. But I kind of look at it from basically the crop physiology standpoint.
Yeah.
You know, is this a root problem, or is this a disease problem? You know. And so that's something I'm working on. I hope to eventually get, hopefully maybe next year, to where, kind of like this irrigation thing,
mm-hmm.
we can just throw it out there and say, hey, look,
if you need
we got this
with.
Service as well. And I'll be more than happy if somebody wants me to come fly a drone and get some images of their field. We can do that as well. But I am still in the learning phases of this. I don't want to go out there and say, oh, this is your problem right here, and it, you know, not be that. So.
Yeah. All right, well, guys, we're getting short on time here, but we appreciate y'all coming up and visiting with us. Always enjoy the conversation. Appreciate what y'all do for our farmers as well. And Simmer, that's a good idea, I think, to have them back a little bit closer to irrigation and talk about some stuff again. So we'll be looking out for that as well. But with that, we'll sign off for the day. As always, appreciate our listeners. And if y'all have any topics we should discuss, please let us know. And as always, if any of us with Alabama Extension can do anything to help, please reach out and get in touch.
The Alabama Crops Report is a production of the Alabama Cooperative Extension System.